Welcome to a different episode of Nui Tech People. In the lead up to Christmas, we'll be releasing some of the mashup episodes, rounding out the big year we've had on the podcast. Today's episode is all about key resources that our guests have used and recommended that have helped them from a productivity perspective or something they've been loving in their career. You can find all the links to these resources on our website, www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Just click on the podcast page for this episode and you'll have the links to all of these resources. Hope you enjoy this mashup episode. From episode 12, Andrew Mears.
Are there things that you're a continual learner, somebody that's, you know, never stopped learning? Are there books or podcasts out there that you listen to on a regular basis, or a book you've read recently that you would recommend for people?
We're in a book at the moment called How Not to Give a Shit. Really good book, actually. Yeah. I guess I don't read a lot of sort of management books and things like that. I've read all the usual sort of startup things, you know, lean startup, and that's been great. I like going to meetups, especially at the start, just being part of the local ecosystem, connecting with events and contributing. Yeah. So being able to sort of put yourself out there and do that pitch when it was the scariest thing in the world, you know, those really create so many great learning opportunities.
Yeah. And then any podcasts or any other things you use from an educational perspective, or blogs?
Yeah, I follow just in general, you know, I get my weekly Crunchbase report. It's great to see what's actually happening. You know, follow the money. Usually tells you where things are happening, as well as sort of the domain media.
Yeah.
Renew Economy is great for the Australian context here in Australia.
Nice, mate. That's good. And yeah, actually, my mention over there, just some domain specific content's always valuable, right?
Yeah.
Find out what else is going on, get out of your own bubble sometimes, which is helpful.
Yeah.
From episode 13, Ryan McPherson.
Any other education things outside of that you personally use?
Yeah, I think, myself, from my education, it's as a CEO, you can kind of get wrapped up into the daily business kind of admin, I guess, and strategy and running and putting fires out, kind of what you do. So I think, you know, staying ahead of the market is always important, or at least trying to. So, you know, look, I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and not from just shouting about myself or the company, but just trying to see if there's some good articles out there, some good learning. I think that what I call snippet learning, you know, that quick 5-minute, 20-minute read, so important. I have chosen around about 10 specific content blogs to follow religiously in the startup world. You know, I've got ProfitWell, who analyze pricing. They do a pricing teardown every week, and that might be, let's say, for example, Slack versus HipChat, for example, and they'll do a pricing, you know, teardown and look at, you know, how it stacks up. And for me, that's a 7-minute video that can be hugely beneficial, looking at PandaDoc versus, you know, DocuSign, for example, and just looking at how they're structuring their pricing, their product. So I call that snippet learning. I take advantage of that whenever I can. So, you know, learning through essentially someone notifying you and saying, hey, here's a piece of content that's going to be really valuable.
Yeah.
It's going to take maybe 5 minutes of your time. Then it's probably going to add a whole bunch of value to my strategic level.
Yeah.
So I probably pass that on to the team as well. So then kind of share that out to our team. And I think other team members are watching design blogs and are watching marketing blogs. And kind of, I guess, there's so much content out there that just being open to spending that time every day and not just focused on the business, but actually focused on, well, how do I improve this business? I don't know everything.
Yeah.
I certainly don't. So how can I glean that information from, another source that's doing this, and then being able to evaluate whether it's good info or bad info.
that's a second challenge, right?
Yeah.
Right, so specific blogs, which ones would you recommend for other people?
Yeah, so look, I guess in the SaaS world where we live, you know, there's things that we look at every day. Pricing is one of them. pricing has such a big impact on your monthly recurring revenue growth and the amount of cost of acquisition. And we just something you have to look at every day. So ProfitWell is a company that their content marketing is spot on. They are analyzing and really providing helpful information. I haven't got their service. I don't, you know, I haven't bought their service, but their content is so strong that if they write me an email, it's the one of the 400 that I open, if that makes sense. So for those guys, you know, they're making really strong content. I think that's smart from them, but it's also very helpful. I think it's Lemkin. I think he runs SASTA. It's the biggest kind of SaaS conference in the world, held in San Fran. I was able to go last year. He has a text message alert blog, which is kind of interesting. I'm sure they're collecting all sorts of data off the people that they but, you know, same thing. If he puts out an article about investment, you know, whether he's seeing early stage B businesses or stage A businesses getting 10 or 15 mil equity, and he kind of throws out a lot of what we call investment chat that I need to be aware of, then I'll be again reading that one. So there's certain, I guess, people influences in the business that you can identify that certainly are doing what they're saying, and then also talking about that. So we kind of leverage that. And I think, from the team perspective, I think there's just a number. Like HubSpot chucks out a lot of good content. You know, we have one called E-Learning Industry in our space, which we appear on a lot, and we also get a lot of value out of. They're kind of writing a lot of articles about what's happening in the training sector. I think it's just about a matter of finding which one works for you. But I like the ones that hit me rather than necessarily kind of sessional. And it's something we've kind of recently thought about in our platform. You know, how do we make sure that the learner doesn't have to be in the platform? You know, they can get that text message and say, hey, there's a 30-second little video that's going to make your job easier today. Here it is, delivered to your inbox in your phone or something along those lines. I think that's where learning's going.
From episode 14, Cameron Owen.
If a dev's, you know, starting out or what you're looking for from an educational perspective, what are you seeing as the best educational resources for devs?
There's a couple of different ways a dev's profile can be broken down, especially on the platform. One of them is just writing code, and so it's the project side of it, which is demonstrating your experience in writing software. So the code you're pushing to GitHub and Bitbucket and whatnot. And for me, one of the things I've actually quite liked, especially when you're trying to get onto new technologies, is some of the platforms like Udemy and Stack Skills as far as technologies. They're really handy just to jump on. One of the biggest resources, so when I started building this platform, I wanted to jump on a web dev technology that seemed to be gaining momentum, and that at the time was Angular.
Yeah.
And
continuing to grow.
Yes. And I think, yeah, I jumped on it just when it became Angular 2.
Yeah.
Now it's Angular 7 or something. And I then needed a back end, but I didn't want to waste a lot. Like, there's only three of us working on this platform.
Yeah.
And it was in our spare time. Like, we're making money during the day. We're coming home at night. It's like, it's not 40 hours a week that we're spending on this. Well, in some instances it was, but it was like...
Yeah, 40 hours during the middle of the night.
Afterwards, yeah. So I wanted then a back end that was really easy to use, that just sort of took care of a lot of things. So Firebase popped up. So they're the two web technologies. So going through YouTube and Google, looking around, I found this really good resource called Angular Firebase. It's this guy that was producing free online content. So I guess just a step away from the paid stuff, where Udemy and Stack Skills are sort of paid content.
I
found that you could also find out really good information just by going through YouTube and looking at tutorials and demos that people were making as well.
Yeah.
So, and for anyone that's getting into Angular development or Angular and Firebase development, I'd highly recommend him, actually, because his content is free and it's excellent. Like, he covers everything you need to know to build a good website.
Nice. There's so much free content out there now.
From episode 15, Ivan Demidov.
Any productivity tools you use on a daily basis?
We use something, aside from all the stuff we use to create the things, our most important tool is called Toggle, which I'm sure there's tons of alternatives to it, but it's basically a time tracking tool. So whenever it's logging time against the job, or logging time against business development, or whatever it is that you're doing, it's very good to have reporting on those things for the next sprint, say, like how many hours you have left on a job, how many can you allocate, when do you have to stop doing this and hand over?
Yeah.
Not that that happens very often, but, you know, you have to be aware of these things.
Yeah.
And so that's a really important one. Is it's not like a, it is sort of an accountability thing, like where have you spent your time? But it's more for business intelligence.
Well, especially when you've got clients, right, and you're charging your self out, you're not going to know how to charge future clients at how long the project
takes. Precisely. So that's happened to us a couple of times where we said, oh, yeah, it'll be this, and then we charge them that, but then it ends up taking twice as long. And we're like, well, we have to wear that now. Yeah. So we don't charge by the hour like a lawyer or something. Like we say, okay, here's what you're going to pay.
Yeah.
If it costs us more time to do it, that's okay. That's our fault.
Yeah. Which would be extremely hard in a situation where you're building bespoke things that you've not done before, right?
Well, now we have like over 20 projects under our belt, so we're getting better. Yeah. And plus, having Sam on board really helps.
Yeah. You need somebody to keep you accountable.
Well, that's it.
Yeah. But outside of obviously your learning, you may mention them. Do you read? Do you listen to podcasts? Is there other educational resources like that you use?
I wish I read more, but right now I'm kind of stuck to doing audiobooks and podcasts, obviously. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I love absorbing knowledge whatever way possible.
Yeah.
So I'm driving somewhere. Do you do similar stuff?
I do Audible.
Yeah.
An Audible subscription.
Nice.
So I think there's about 25 books sitting in there. Probably about 7 or 8 unread at the moment. Or unlistened to. But
I've got to get your list after this.
Yeah, we'll chip away through that. Mine are all over the shop. Okay. Heaps of philosophy and stuff like that.
It's just
the way of thinking and understanding human behavior and that sort of jazz. I just find that super interesting.
I've got a really big stack of DVDs, believe it or not. I need to have a DVD player to watch them now. But it's on psychology. It's like the Teaching Company lecture series. It's about 12 DVDs long. I'm about halfway through it.
I'm super interested in sort of finding a flow state and how to do that, right? Like, I find sometimes like I'm working in the middle of the night. Like, I think my sweet spot's between like 9:30
at night?
Yeah, 9:30 at night, kids are in bed, and I open up the laptop and then the next thing I know it's 1 a.m.
Oh, or something like that. So
like, between like, I think it's like 10 p.m. and 1 a.m. it's like, I can just get in this like zone, if it's such a thing, a flow state or a zone.
Of course.
I'd love to know how to turn that on, turn it off.
My theory on that is that it's because you have no anticipation of distractions. Whereas during the day, you might be working away, but there's always that thing of like the phone might ring or someone might walk through the door and ask me a question. Whereas at midnight, that's not going to happen.
From episode 17, Scott McShane.
Is there any people in particular you would recommend either on Twitter or elsewhere that people should follow for advice?
So Simon Wardley, who does the Wardley Maps thing, and Rachel Murphy from Different are both pretty cool thought leaders that interest me at the moment, and I don't think they've really shared anything bad over the last few weeks. So,
nice. Yeah, go there. What are those? Maybe they're unknown to me.
So Different is a consultancy, kind of like it's innovation / development consultancy, and they've done some pretty cool contributions. So,
nice.
Sort of worth. She's the, I think, the CEO.
Yeah.
And Simon Wardley does this cool kind of business mapping type technique, and that's kind of his main trick. But he also has a pretty good contribution to the Twitter sphere and the technical space as well. So I'm finding them interesting at the moment. It's worth checking out.
I definitely might go down the Simon route, I think.
Yeah.
I'll give him both a crack anyway. Have a look. And it's interesting. I think, as you said, finding other people that are knowledgeable in their space, finding out who they learn from.
Yeah.
You dig a little bit of that. Not everything that you love, I'll love, and vice versa. But if you give things a crack, I think you can do enough scratching the surface, you'll find the things that, you know, that you find valuable, right?
Yeah.
Nice. Mate, outside of the education part, your role is obviously a busy one. What do you do from a productivity perspective to keep yourself on target each day, whether it be apps, whether it be routine-based? Are there any things that you'd recommend or that you've found successful?
So I use Trello pretty religiously to manage my own. There's sections of my mind. I tend to break it up, one for the things that I can be doing for my team, one for the work that the team and I are doing to work on, and another one just more me generally, how to organize my tasks. Something that I want to be better at, that's one of my sort of development areas about how do I get better yield out of my time. It's definitely something I'm focused on. I use that. I think I also used MindNode, which is a mind mapping tool. Thank you, Glenn Thomas, for that one. It's amazing, and it's good for getting your ideas up on a wall. It's worthwhile.
That's mind map.
Mind Node, I think it's called. It's just a mind mapping tool, but it's super, it's pretty elegant. It's nice.
From episode 18, Chris Hildebrandt.
Outside of formal education, mate, any podcasts, books you like to read?
Yeah, so don't listen to podcasts because I typically try and get away from podcasts at work. I can't focus. If I've got someone talking in my ear, I tend to, my brain goes that way versus focusing on the task at hand.
Yeah.
And I'm also a big core believer of unplugging. As much as I love technology, I unplug as much as possible. So I minimize my RF at home. My Wi-Fi gets turned off overnight. Phone's going into airplane modes and things, turn the power off once a month for no electromagnetic radiation. So part of that downtime is reading some books, right? So I try and disconnect and unplug. So I've got some cool books here that...
I do see that you've brought some books along for the journey today.
Just for the viewers at home, right? So I've got, I guess, a few categories. And these ones here are my core books that sit on rotate, right? And they're from people and understanding teams. And I guess it's the foundation of why I built such great teams in the past. And as a leader, but if you want to read a book about people, Personality Plus, understanding the personality types and realizing that the person you're speaking to doesn't need to change, you yourself need to change so that they're listening to what you're actually trying to communicate. And you got to do that in different ways depending on their personality. If you don't understand it, how do you communicate with them? So key book in understanding that there. Five love languages. This one's not just about love light. So yeah, it's great for partners and lovers, but also really good in understanding your team, right? So the concepts there around the ways that you can gratify or reward your team depends on how they perceive that based on their love language. So whether they like high fives, whether they like them to have words of affirmation being spoken to, whether they like just some one-on-one time, taking them out to lunch or taking them out to a coffee, or small little gifts, or just doing a small task for them. Understanding how they receive that. So those two books together, you get a really good understanding as how people perceive what you're saying to them.
Yeah.
And that's been critical to I guess, understanding and building the right teams because people clash and you understand why in a few of those. One of my favorite books, The Slight Edge Effect, right? If you're not moving forwards, you're moving backwards. There is no concept of staying stable. And I love change. Change is the best thing, which is, I guess, why maybe I like technology, changing so fast.
Yeah.
I hate being stagnant. I hate being in similar positions. Like, I'm always moving fast. It's, I guess, a really good virtue, but also a very negative virtue.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get bored easily, but I like the right differences. And this kind of outlines and explains quite well why that's the case and why I like change, right? If you're sitting still, you're going backwards. So how do I always increase and drive to better myself, better my team, better anything I'm trying to do is kind of based on the principles of the slight edge effect.
Yeah, nice. We've got a couple others there. What else have we got?
Oh, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. The Secret. The definitive book of body language. So I did a course with Alan Peace a few years ago. So he's world renowned. He writes most of the president's speeches and how they should be. So not just the verbal speech, but also their physical speech of how and when they should be using their hands, their body language, who they're pointing to or talking to. So that's a good book too. Really good for salespeople to understand how they're being perceived and how to close deals. But still a good book to understand when someone doesn't want to actually be speaking to you right now, when they're trying to get away.
Yeah.
So good book. And one of my favorite entrepreneurial books, You Only Have to Be Right Once.
That's true.
There's many successful people out there they're successful. Could they repeat that success? Maybe. Maybe not. But who cares? You only have to be right once.
Yeah.
And
a lot of those people haven't only tried once, right? A lot of those people have a lot of failures behind them, but it's that you keep on trying, you try
exactly
new things.
Just keep driving.
From episode 19, Josh Peak.
From a further educational perspective, outside the training we've done, is there any, you mentioned audiobooks, you try to listen to 80 years, is there any other hardcore books or or audiobooks that you've listened to lately that you'd highly recommend?
So there's one book I've been pushing onto my team called The Phoenix Project.
Yeah.
And it's based on another book called The Goal, where they take like lean manufacturing and the lean startup sort of methodology, which is essentially the scientific method. I have a hypothesis, I'm going to test it, and I iterate on that, and you have a feedback loop, and you close it. But the way they've applied it is to an IT environment. And as a knowledge worker, you have a lot of invisible work in progress. And the way they've written the story is first person. So you follow around this guy called Bill in an IT department, and everything's on fire, and he's trying to recover the business. And it's really good in the audiobook form because the voice acting is superb.
Yeah.
But I've been pushing it onto my team because I've read it twice now. Other companies I've worked at, multiple colleagues have also read it and loved it. So I've got a bet going with my team. If you read it and you get nothing out of it, I will give you $100 for your time. That's how strongly I recommend it.
So awesome. What was that called again?
It's called The Phoenix Project.
Do you know who it was by?
There's three authors.
Okay, we'll link that up in the show notes anyway. I'm sure we'll be able to find it. That'll be an interesting one. That's good. It's good to get a highly recommended book like that, right? That's one that you can go, yep, I'll put my own dollars on that.
Because if they don't get anything out of it, it's like, all right, fair enough, I'll pay for that. But I guarantee that I'll have better colleagues for them understanding what the idea is of planned and unplanned work and invisible work and being on top of that. Because there's so many like subtle issues when you're just focused on solving your immediate problem and not looking at the whole project.
Yeah. Outside of audiobooks then, Twitter. Twitter, do you follow anyone on Twitter? Are you following any blogs or anything that you'd recommend for people to say, hey, you should definitely follow this, or you should definitely be a subscriber to XYZ?
So there's a website called realpython.com. Yep. So I follow that, and the guy that runs that, Dan Bader, he's a bit of a luminary in the Python ecosystem. He does a drip email feed thing where he'll send out once a week a little snippet like, did you know you can do this in Python? But also he links to their blogs. It's a decent sized article, so here's a feature of Python. Go deep on it, or as little or shallow as you want on it.
Yeah.
So they're really awesome. It's very high quality, and I was working on a Python project a few years ago, had a few years away from it, and now Komatsu is very Python heavy, so I had to do like a 2-year catch up. So Real Python was awesome for that, and there's a few podcasts that listen to a 2-year backlog of podcasts, and I get that historical catch up as well. Yeah, like, what's happening in the industry?
Nice. What are the podcasts of choice?
That was Talk Python to Me and Python Bites.
That is a lot of Python catching up, man.
Yes.
Booking a couple of podcasts. I mean, as you said, it's one of those things, investing in self, investing in time, right? It just doesn't come by chance.
Before coming in, I checked how many podcasts I listened to. It was like 15 a week that I listened to.
Yeah, right.
But that's, of course, whenever I'm mowing the lawn, doing the ironing, washing the car, housework, like my wife's happier that I'm doing it, but like that's my go-to time to catch up on podcasts. So I smash your favorite content.
Yeah, nice. Any other podcasts you'd recommend outside of that to people?
There's a really good one called No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yeah.
It's not a technical one. It's just a whole bunch of fun facts told by four British comedians.
So yeah, nice. That's a good one to recommend.
Episode 20, Ryan Stevenson.
So yeah, that's been a big personal lesson for me. In terms of tools, I'm a bit of a Google fanboy, and I've been using Google Keep recently to manage what I'm doing at work. I can keep multiple. It's slightly more sophisticated than just a standard to-do list. Yeah. I can keep multiple lists. I could have subsets. And I can link in to Google Docs. I can have links into emails and things like that. So I've been using Google Keep a lot recently to just organize my thoughts. And it's that thing where, you know, if a thought pops into your head that you need to do something, or you can just, I can just get my phone out and put it in there, and then it's at my desktop next time I'm there. So I'm finding Google Keep pretty useful. And I've been trying, but with mixed success, the Pomodoro technique for trying to organize my day. You know this?
I've got the app on my phone. Right, I think it's been opened about half a dozen times.
you know, I'll listen to a podcast or I'll read a book and or listen to an audiobook and they're like, oh yeah, this is the way to go.
Yeah.
I'm like, I've got to get into this. I'm trying to get out of the multitasking and get into the more focused approaches.
Yes.
So I think one of my problems in the past is just different things coming at me and I'm like, oh, a bit of this, bit of that. Or I'm trying to get, you know, focused area, 20 minutes, boom, in this zone, tick that box. I wouldn't say I'm successful at it at the moment.
No, me either. It's a work in progress.
Yeah, I can definitely see the benefits. And really, it shouldn't be too difficult. It really shouldn't be too difficult to, you know, to section out a half an hour block and be, you know, 25 minutes of this is really, you know, concentrated time.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be too difficult. I have found it difficult, though. I think you've just got to train yourself, right?
Yeah. And I think that technique suits some types of work that you need to get through and it doesn't fit quite so well for other things where you've got to make a bunch of calls or things like that. So it kind of gets disrupted and then I lose the flow. But
I'm the exact same. Even if I'm making calls for that 25 minutes, that, you know, one call changes the direction, which leads to another task, and I end up down a rabbit hole.
Yep, yep.
But I definitely see the benefits of it. So there's probably three tips I guess we can share with the listeners. Is there any other software tools or anything? You obviously mentioned Jira before, but that's probably more so for the actual dev team.
Yes, we use on the non-technical side, we do use Jira because it's there, it's available to us. We do use it for some other things like travel requests, tasking.
Yeah.
We put together travel itineraries and put together costings and then have them approved. And we use the Jira system to track all that.
Yep.
We use Confluence as a sort of living knowledge repository. And that's useful for me on the legal side.
Yep.
So we have a legal resources space in Confluence where I can put up a lot of information that deals with frequently asked questions or standard template documents are made available in the Confluence, in our legal space on Confluence. So we use that tool. I've just recently discovered Slack. So the technical side of the business has been using Slack for a while.
Yeah.
And I'm about 3 weeks into using Slack. So that looks interesting. It's got some possibilities.
Oh, definitely. It's probably that consistency again, right? It's if everyone's in there and everyone's using it, it's really valuable.
Yeah.
There's a mix between that and email and everything else, it can become another tool, right?
Yeah, and that's a danger in a tech business where for every problem you reach for a tech solution, you end up with this dog's breakfast of, oh, we'll use email for that, we're using Slack for that, we're using Skype for that.
Yeah.
So
very difficult, right? Yeah.
From episode 21, Jeremy Gupta.
Do you have any productivity tools or softwares that you use on a daily basis to, you know, get you through the day?
I do. I quite like lists, so short-term lists, long-term lists, which I segment into kind of personal and professional lives. I don't, you know, have any purchase software. I use Apple Notes.
Yeah.
But I find it, you know, particularly useful having a set of things that you want to achieve in a given time period. So I have one for a day and one for a week. And I have some longer-term things which I kind of bring in, you know, when there's time and availability to do that. I have... Yeah, some pretty big things as well that, you know, I probably want to achieve. And I'm a big believer in that you probably overcook what you think you can achieve in 1 year, but you underplay what you can achieve in 3 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, having kind of a horizon of where you want to be and what you want to do and what you want to achieve at a three-year horizon, I think is hugely beneficial because you'll find you probably can. I don't use anything too fancy in terms of tooling, but I find like short lists keep you focused and, you know, you can kind of celebrate the wins when you get through that list. Hugely beneficial for progress.
From episode 22, Jonathan Hooker.
Hey, where are you getting your learnings at the moment? Where is that? Is it reading books? Is it attending a formal education? Is it having discussions with smart people? Where has this come from for you?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, when people say you go down the rabbit hole.
Yep.
Ugh. It's down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So what happens is you usually start with a friend and they ask you some questions and you don't know those answers. And then you upskill yourself and then suddenly you leave it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I actually did this with a friend that owns a big VC firm in Europe. So we sat in a pub in England and we talked about the Bitcoin paper. This was years ago. And he asked me some questions about blockchain. And I was a techie and I didn't know, and it annoyed me. So I went away, learned some stuff, went back to him. And then it was probably a year later, I started to ask more and more questions.
Yeah.
And the key thing is there is nobody, I read a lot. I say that. I actually podcast. What I do is I take them and I go for long walks along the beach and let the speakers speak it to me, because it's complex. Like blockchain, IoT, AI, decentralized companies are really complex because it's game theory, economics, technology, all into one. So I have to read it quite a few times to really piece together all the parts of what's happening. There's a few, I listen to a lot of economics and monetary podcasts because they're probably the weakest because I never had that education. But with tech, any white paper, Outlier Ventures in Europe's really good. Just read all their research. Anything that I can, any papers basically.
So if you could point people in two or three directions for education, where would you start for our listeners if we could link them up in the show notes?
I would read every word Outlier Ventures has got on research and every company that they've invested in. That would take you 6 months. So just do that and then you'll be ready to rock.
Yeah. No. From episode 23, Daniel Odd.
From a productivity standpoint or a project standpoint, how do you sort of manage your day?
Find it a little bit more difficult these days. So the Kanban or your Jira board or Tuki Ono. I can never get his name right. Toyota, Kanban, the boards, swim lanes, doesn't really matter. So you used to break up your projects and a lot of that stuff was done for you just by turning up and going through your ceremonies and doing that. If I ever wanted to know what my next task was, I would head over to the to-do column. I don't have as much of that. I'm a lot more self-governed. Getting stuff done. Getting things done. Getting stuff done.
GTD.
Getting things done. So I subscribe to that a lot. So lists, big into lists, whether you want to use Trello boards, Jira boards, Google lists, little post-it, Snagit sort of note on your desktop, however you want to do. I'm big on lists. I'm big on I can file it. I know if I put in that list, I will get back to it. And I'll come and I'll reprioritize it and I'll see how it goes. So I think for me, whatever tool floats your boat, whatever one works best for you, go with.
Yeah.
But I think getting things done, if you haven't looked into any of that, Google that.
Down that path at one stage. It's a pretty deep path.
It does get rather deep, and obviously he gets right into it. Yeah. I think if you just look at, for me, what I took from that, like any advice, you're going to get advice from everyone. You've got to pick what works for you.
Yeah.
So I looked at that, and the things, main things I took out of that would be put things in a list and make sure you go back to that list, you reprioritize that list, and you can't put half your day on it and then forget the other half. You got to be pretty religious in doing that. That's probably my biggest productivity tip for anyone that's self-managing. I think a lot of the time where I've worked in a scrum team and you sit down, you do sprint planning, that literally plans out your week for 2 weeks. And the fundamentals are if you're working on things that aren't on that board, you're working on the wrong thing.
From episode 24, James Newell.
How did you learn to do this in your own time then? Self-educated?
So dad kind of taught himself when he got the computer. He modified a few games to be maths questions rather before you can do something.
Yeah.
So dad helped a bit, plus the internet, I guess, tutorials and that kind of thing. SitePoint back in the day in the high school years for all the PHP, MySQL, all that kind of stuff. But it's really cool kind of seeing I guess how many resources are available now for learning all that kind of thing, like Stack Overflow and like the it used to take hours of kind of debugging something or trying to reverse engineer something, and how easy it is to find answers to problems these days is pretty cool.
From episode 25, Robert Lang.
One of the questions you'd sent through was, what is your one productivity tool?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, if I can only have one, it'd have to be the G Suite.
Yeah.
Right? Because, well, I've got Gmail, I've got Google Docs, I've got Google Sheets, I've got everything I need there. It's not very sexy in terms of one tool, but it's the tool I spend the most time in, probably.
Yeah.
I try to manage my day through a fairly well-known by now principle, which is called GTD, which is getting things done.
Yeah.
And linked to Inbox Zero.
Yeah.
So I have my Gmail configured so that I can organize my emails, get my inbox to zero, organize my emails into a GTD kind of a process.
Hmm.
I quite often fall off the wagon and have to clean things up. But that's how I try to manage my time. So I use various tools. I use a tool called Todoist at the moment for my to-do lists. One tool that I have been experimenting with at the last couple of roles, which works quite well, is a virtual assistant, which they use one called x.ai. It's URL.
Yeah.
And you get given, so when you sign up, you pay something like $10 a month.
Yeah.
And you get assigned an AI assistant who manages your calendar and is linked into the calendar. Yeah. So you literally just copy, so you can either have Amy or Andrew, depending on your preference. So I have Amy. And if someone says to me, hey, Rob, can we catch up next week for a bit of a chat? Just need an hour of your time.
Mm-hmm.
I can reply and say, sure thing, Amy, copy Amy into the thing and then say, Amy, can you find a time for us to meet? And what's cool about it is the AI assistant interacts with the person until is resolved. So they can propose, you know, Rob has Thursday afternoon available. That person can respond back saying, no, I'm busy, but I can do Friday. And then they can say, how about Friday, 2 p.m.? That person can say, sounds good. Then they send the calendar invites.
Perfect.
So they handle all that sort of stuff. And I was a bit skeptical, but I definitely wanted to play with it when I first heard about it.
Yeah, right.
And I've had a few hiccups, you know, like 99% of the time.
That's right.
It just gets sorted and organized. And I've even had friends joke back, you know, Amy is super efficient, you know, and full well knowing that it's AI.
Yeah.
So that's one cool thing that I've been playing with. And it's amazing how much time that saves. Mm. And I never had, so far, I've been using it for 2 years. I've never had anyone have any negative response to it. I had people when I first proposed it actually theorized that it was kind of negative. Isn't that a bit impersonal? You're handing off to an AI assistant. Well, but when I've worked at big corporations, I've had a personal assistant.
Yeah.
And he or she would organize my calendar. So this is just an AI doing it.
Yeah.
But I was expecting some people to say it's a bit rude you hooking me off to an AI.
Yeah.
But as I said, I haven't had anyone, at least verbally, tell me.
From episode 26, James Weekly. Is there anywhere that you'd point people from an educational perspective?
If it's particularly around data analytics, I've filled in some small gaps, I guess, over the years from DataCamp is a good site.
Yeah.
So 4 or 5 years ago, it was probably one of the big ones or one of the only ones that, but now there's probably a lot more. I found early on Kaggle was good. It's a website where people can post competitions for predictive modeling. Mm-hmm. So a company or someone might post a data set and you have to train a model on that data set and then score some sample data, and they basically have leaderboards. And that's a good website because, A, you get to learn on some real data. You have some chance of winning a competition, although these days the professionals with a lot of experience tend to win them.
Yeah.
But you also get a lot of the people in that community are really good at sharing what they know. So you'll often see people who won a competition that maybe you had a try at winning will then go and post the code that they wrote to get the winning entry, and you might learn something each time about a new technique for maybe the way you prepared the data or some of the parameters you use. So it's kind of a good, nice little feedback loop. You get to be a part of a competition.
A little bit of gamification in there always helps, right? Like,
yeah,
you get that more and more in learning providers as well. Like, even as things as basic as badges, right? Badges for the different things you've done, but through sort of, you know, genuine competitions like that.
Yeah.
From episode 27, Martin Carr.
From a productivity perspective, how do you operate? Is there a productivity tool that you use?
Well, I should, I certainly have a productivity tool. It's my CTO, Craig Williams. Hello, Craig. That's a bit rude calling him a productivity tool. No, but yeah, so in the first couple of years starting everything, I mean, I started as a one-man show. I did everything. Yeah. I did everything poorly. Yeah. And I remain an amateur in a wide range of areas professionally. Now we have structure. We have a CTO who's supremely experienced in running teams and building software.
He's definitely got some strengths there. He's
absolutely. So, so I've been able to bring that structure in and run it. So I don't take so much of a role in the day-to-day development, you know, in terms of grooming the backlog, planning sprints, that kind of stuff. Speaking specifically about tools, we run Slack because I think ASIC finds you now if you don't run Slack. Slack obviously is ubiquitous. It's super useful. Jira, again, we're a software company. People laugh at you if you don't use Atlassian products. Personally, Todoist.
Yeah.
Just a, you know, to-do checklist. Mm-hmm. That's how I keep myself focused. Mm-hmm. By, you know, fulfilling a list of tasks, prioritizing them, and just smashing through them. I've been accused in the past of being disorganized and having a pretty chaotic style.
From episode 28, Nigel Castellino.
It's just different. There's different avenues, right? Whether it be mentorship and learning from somebody, or we're looking at, you know, online courses or parts thereof with university courses.
Yeah.
A lot of universities are starting to offer courses that you can take and you don't have to take the full degree as well.
Yeah, for sure. There's all these micro degrees, which are interesting. Actually, one thing you mentioned about mentorship, you know, like recently, you know, spoken to, you know, one of the persons who's kind of become my mentor. I would actually recommend that. I think you were asking before about what your recommendation would be, like moving from the senior engineer to, so I guess, CTO level. I would definitely recommend getting a mentor who's gone through that, gone through that process, and that's helped me immensely. Some of the things he's taught me, I've started to implement now. Like, you know, getting off coding, stop touching code, get to the high level. You know, read some interesting books like The Hard Thing About Hard Things. He suggested High Output Management. So there's a lot of kind of management books that...
My Hard Thing About Hard Things is a great book. I don't want to cliche, couldn't put it down, but that was one of the books that I pushed through pretty quickly. I was quite engaging.
Yeah, it was. And I think, I like the fact that it was... It was more, there's no real plan, you know, to running a business. There's a whole bunch of plans, obviously, but sometimes you just got to do what you got to do to get through it.
That's just real. That was the other thing because, I've read a lot of management and a lot of, other type of educational books, and theories are fantastic, right? And it's really good to have some base concepts that you can, you know, lean on. But it's also really interesting to hear from someone that's gone through it, and it's not a straight line.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not.
Things are difficult. People make mistakes. Even the most successful people, like you, made significant mistakes throughout that process, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Could have things been an easier ride? Definitely.
Yeah.
In the end, they've had a wealth of success. But
yeah,
it also gives people, gave me insights and probably just confidence that, you know, we all have our good days and our other days. We'll make good decisions and bad.
From episode 29, Jemima Irvin.
Is there any productivity tools you use? Is there anything that you, you find really interesting? That
so I think probably my new favorite thing is Miro, or it used to be called Real-Time Boards. And it's a really great way, because a lot of what I try to do is make problems visual, or make solutions visual. So it's, you know, looking at current state, making journey maps, or, you know, if I'm in a meeting with a bunch of stakeholders, almost mapping out the relationships between them all and what they're working on, so I can look at it later and be like, okay, that person and that person, I need to talk to them about X, rather than going through a page of notes. It's all visual. So with Miro, it's cloud-based, so I can share it with people as well, and we can be working on it together, you know, remotely. So that's been great, because I can just, you know, flick a link to someone and be like, here's what I'm imagining this should be, or here's my stakeholder map, and this might help you. So that's been really good for collaboration, which is a lot of what I do.
Nice.
So I love Miro boards. And
we'll link that up in the show notes, because I think that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's basically like a big virtual whiteboard.
Yeah.
So, and you can do kind of anything with it. I've seen people use it for product maps, or, yeah, I use it a lot for journey maps, but, yeah, mind maps and brainstorming, and, yeah, it's great. The other thing I use it a lot is Trello. I think that's probably a well-known tool. Yeah, it's very versatile, and, again, you can collaborate. We use it for, strangely enough, for research. We use it for research documentation, and Back in the day, we would put post-it notes on the wall and do affinity mapping, where you're grouping like with like together. Yeah. And that's how we do our research analysis. And at some point we were like, well, let's try this in Trello. And we started to do the same thing. So it's digitized and it's just there, and you don't have to worry about having a wall, because finding a free wall is like finding gold. And so you can do it digitally. You can do it remotely. You can all be sitting at your computers doing it. It's maybe not as much fun, but it's quite effective. So, yeah, Trello has been a really good tool for all sorts of things. But the research analysis was a surprise. The surprise use.
Yeah, saving the rainforest, eh? I've seen
that. True, that too.
Those different coloured post-it notes. I've been in one or two of those meetings before, and all the different coloured post-it notes on the wall, which is, as you said, there. Sometimes there are some advantages of having people in a room and doing it together, but hey, it's not always applicable. You can't always get everyone together. So if there's a way to do that and have people remotely all working together.
Yeah, and for some of the research pieces we've done, you would have like, you know, thousands of post-it notes based on how many Trello cards we've had. So, it's good.
And somebody has to document that all at the end of the day as well, right? So having it all done in Trello,
it's all in Trello. You're just cutting a step, which is good.
Yeah, very nice. Mm. Anything else you use on a daily basis?
Just probably some graphic design tools. I've used Sketch, and I use Illustrator a fair bit more in my service design role than I did with UX.
Yeah.
UX, we use Sketch a lot, but I think because I'm probably illustrating more things these days, which is odd. I'm using some of my design skills probably more than I used to, which was a surprise. Yeah. So, design tools to visualize things to share with people, and sometimes that's... Yeah,
amazing. Well, that's half the battle sometimes, really, is like trying to communicate what you're talking about, right? And if through an illustration is an easy way to do it.
And I think trying to communicate. So if we do a research piece of like, here's what the customer is experiencing, so this is the problem we're trying to solve, being able to communicate that with, you know, even just really basic forms of illustration, you can communicate emotion and feelings, and so that creates empathy with the people that you're talking to, and that's again half the battle, like to get them to understand the journey that the member's going through and empathize with them. That's really powerful.
From episode 30, Luke Bennis.
The best thing about productivity is the less amount of time you have, the more you're like to get something done, you'll just get it done faster. So I've just am super efficient with what I've got to get done and have a few days to do it. I also manage it in the sense that my freelance is built off a few key relationships, so that means that it's probably not as overwhelming as it sounds. So I know kind of who I'm dealing with and where stuff's coming from and that sort of thing. So
And you spoke about your mutual distaste of to-do lists with Colin before.
To-do list apps.
You found anything that ticks your box?
Not quite. Like I I still have my version of a to-do app in my head that I want to make, and I haven't seen it yet, so it'll come out. There's things that do parts of what I want to do, but they don't all do it. Not that mine will be that good, I don't know, but I just want it. But I use Notion. That has been a lifesaver. Notion.
What's Notion?
Notion.so, which is a new app. It's a new unicorn that, yeah. You know, everyone can have a look at. But, yeah, it is a... wiki, so it's like an Evernote, but yeah. But it's more markup based, like a lot simpler, but just a lot more powerful. Really simple, like it's free for ages, which is great. I pay for it, but yeah, it's a great app. I collect everything that I do in it. I put it Evernote into it. It has an extraction for that, but so if anyone out there is using Evernote,
which I am,
which you are, then have a look at Notion, because Evernote's good, not bad, but Notion is just so good.
From a pure note-taking perspective.
Yeah, just notes, a bit everything. You can embed everything. So Notion is where I collected all that design system stuff for Social Pinpoint. And then because you get a live link for that page, it's like making mini websites. It is a wiki product.
Yeah.
You make wikis in it, but you can just do a page or you connect them. So it's really flexible. I do all my personal stuff in it and all my client work. So when you do a UI with me or some other work, I actually create a page for us and I put stuff in there and explain stuff and I have images and explanations and it's like a little wiki of the work. It's not in email
all right.
anymore. So it actually takes me out of email and out of my other note-taking app. It's phenomenal.
That is a big wrap.
It's very good.
You should become a salesperson.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah, if you can sell brand synth as well as you can
sell Yeah, I should. Yeah, I'll work on it. Yeah. Yeah, our product isn't as compelling. No, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Notion. It's very good. That's awesome. What I stay on top of.
Things. Awesome. You're pretty educated, dude. You've obviously built a piece of software. Informally, formally. Yeah. Education. Mate, you know your stuff, let's put it that way. Where do you do your learning?
Well, online. So like any good nerd, I have a good feed of things that I've culled down to follow a few websites. Yep. But mostly reading has been a big place.
Let's start with those few websites. Where do you go?
Well, it's a bit of a collection of a few design ones and some just for, there's no single one. Places like Web Designer Depot and some really big ones that people know. Like I stay on top of those and CSS Tricks, places like that. But those things in aggregate really, I just sort of watch what's happening on those and pick up tips and tricks through them. And otherwise, I don't look at that much design stuff. But, yeah, I read, a lot of nonfiction, which I find really helpful. So I'm actually a little bit, out of scope, hands-off on the design space just because I, find it not useful.
Yeah.
So I look for other places to learn, really. I've gotten a lot into behavioral economics. The Freakonomics podcast is really good.
Yeah.
That side of things, because that's money and psychology smashed together, so that's a really good it's just business.
Yeah.
Right, but also design is like me visually communicating something to you, but also emotionally and basically trying to manipulate you into some sort of feeling about it, right? So that's
psychology,
it's all psychology, it's all those bits. So I try and I like to read about other things. I find it all feeds each other. So that's why, you design, then you code a bit and you do some other things. I do a bit of video editing and animation and try and pick up all those bits, at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And then feed them all back together, see what you know.
That's fun.
Yeah. I just read nonfiction a lot. And then I'm reading my personal MBA at the moment, which is amazing.
What's that?
It's just a book that summarizes an entire MBA into an absorbable part, but it's just really succinct, amazing. Yeah. Can't remember who wrote it. I'm sort of 70% through at the moment, so I haven't turned back to the cover yet. But I can't remember his name, but it's quite famous. It's been around for a long time. Andrew gave it to me and said you should read this, and I was like 2 pages in. It's amazing. So because I don't have any business education apart from just being around sort of other businesses and startups, and design agencies are an interesting place to get business experience because we help lots of clients do stuff, and so we get to know about them and their business and what they're doing, especially when you help a startup.
Yeah.
So looking from the outside in has been really interesting.
From episode 31, Nick Pincombe and Matt Debus.
So you guys are both obviously really busy, working full-time jobs and then running this side business. Some productivity tools, how do you get this done? Let's start with Nick.
So I guess, yeah, there's not a lot of time after I get home from a full day of work. So for me, productivity is about having a really clear idea about what I need to actually do, something, you know, smaller modular that I can accomplish. So I don't have a lot of time to procrastinate or muck around. So I use an Agile board. It makes it really clear what's front and center needs to be done. I have a pretty reliable, fast laptop. You know, you don't want to be, if you're waiting for something slow, you start to get distracted, it gives you excuses to not to get work done. Another thing for me as a developer, I need to make sure my environment is pretty well configured, because if I start pulling down the latest code and my environment's broken for whatever reason, which just happens sometimes, I like to know that. So I use Docker and Ansible at the moment.
Yeah.
Just seems to work for me. So that just allows me to containerize my environment and I have a well-defined configuration.
Yeah.
And so that means I can, you know, fire up my application and it works, and I can write in my code and test it. And there's not a lot of knocking around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Great stuff, Matt.
I think for me, yeah, Docker and Ansible are great tools. I can go and break a system and leave it in a weird state and just go, no, get rid of it, start again, clean, fresh.
Yeah.
It's easy. Also keeping a good wiki. We keep some good documents around that we can, you know, keep track of different things that we,
yeah, especially
since we follow things like that.
Because we work on quite a few different products, you know, with all our customers.
Yeah.
So keeping a wiki really helps refresh the memory, basically.
Yeah, nice. Just
link things differently.
And you guys both contribute to that, obviously.
Yeah, you do.
Very nice. Any other tools you use, Matt, from a productivity perspective?
From productivity?
Depends how, like, production you want to be.
Yeah.
Hacking testing, right? We use, you know, Metasploit, things like
that. Yeah, yeah. So there's, in terms of hacking tools, you know, you can use tools like Searchploit. It's basically a database of common vulnerabilities. You can go use that and use Metasploit to exploit those vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
There's tools like OWASP Zap that just automatically go and try out the top 10 most common vulnerabilities on your website.
Yeah, right.
Help speed that sort of process up a bit.
Very nice.
Things like that, yeah.
Nice. And then you guys obviously both learned this as you went. You both did the Tulsa, course on top of your degrees. Any other forms of education that you've said, whether it be a book or a podcast that you really recommend to people that might have an interest in growing their knowledge around security?
So I've done a couple of Coursera courses as well.
Yeah.
Definitely go look at Coursera. They've got a few things around. Listening to a lot of audio books.
Yeah.
Things like 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel.
Yeah.
A really good book. Lead Startup.
Yeah. Eric Rice.
Yeah.
10x Rule.
10x.
By Grant Cardone. That was a really good one. I think a lot of mine are geared more towards the business and leadership.
Yeah. Any others on top of those three that you'd mentioned?
I found really valuable if you're into business. The personal MBA was pretty good. It's basically like a full MBA.
Yeah.
Type course compressed into a 13-hour audiobook.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, it's good fundamental stuff.
Yeah, I don't think I can put myself through an MBA.
True.
I know some people that have, and touche to anyone that has, because there's some definite hours put into that.
From episode 33, Siobhan Curran.
From a productivity perspective, any tools you use, any theories, any way of doing things to manage your day, manage your workload?
So I'm a big, big fan of, I've tried everyone. Like I'm a master of none. I'm just try everything. So I've tried online, we actually use Trello in the office for project management stuff, like particular events and projects that we're working on. But I've tried them all, Asana, like every single one of them. And the only thing I find works really well is writing things down.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of bullet journaling.
Yeah.
Massive advocate for that. And in fact, I've really fallen off the wagon with bullet journaling over the last month or so, and I'm really feeling it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't take much to get back into it and do it right. But man, it makes such a difference to my day. I just find writing and ticking just a very rewarding and helpful way.
And I think everyone remembers things differently as well, right? And a lot of people, I think you're right, a lot of people, that act of writing things down makes a difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. From an educational perspective, any books you'd recommend to people?
Well, talking about interesting pathways to getting to where you are, I just finished reading a book called Educated by Tara Westhoff.
Yeah.
She's got a really unique upbringing, a story to tell in her upbringing, but it talks about the power of education and what impact it can have on your worldview,
yeah,
and the relationships you build as a result of it, particularly with your family.
Yeah.
It was like I've never sat down and read a book like an autobiography like that in 2 days. Like I just could not put it down. It was the most fascinating story. So I highly recommend that.
We'll link that up in the podcast.
Yeah. And then what else am I? Oh, okay. So I was just at a conference in it's called the Global Consortium of Entrepreneurship Centers Conference. It happens every year somewhere in the world. And this year it was in Europe. And the keynote speaker was Hans Rosling's son. I should know his first name, but I can't think of what it is. He's a big data visualization specialist. So yeah, he's done a couple of TED Talks as well. And he started a company called Gapminder, which is about how do you use information to present real world facts. So what they have done is developed this website called gapminder.org, and you go on it and it provides you with, I think 12 questions that you have to answer. So for an example, one is, scientists, agree that, temperatures on Earth will either rise, decline, or stay the same in the future. So you pick which one, right? So it's questions around perceptions around society and how we're performing. And it gives you your answers at the end, how wrong or right you are. And what's really interesting in the research that they've done around people's responses, particularly if you get people as a cohort to respond, so they've had like Nobel laureates as one group respond to these questions. No one's gotten all 12 right. And whether you break it up by country or by age or by job, it really gives you an idea of where people are getting their information from and how wrong they are about their perceptions around what's actually happening in the world.
Yep.
And I would highly recommend people going and doing this and keep doing it until you get all 12 right, because you do get a little certificate at the end.
There are.
But what it does is it sets your worldview correctly.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever perceptions you have about there being a developing countries and developed countries, that paradigm doesn't exist anymore. There's four stages and the majority of people in the world are in the two middle ones.
Yeah, wow.
So it's very rare that people are in extreme poverty and very rare that you're in extreme wealth. So the huge market opportunities that are available in the middle class in what we used to call developing countries is huge now. So China and India is like massive market potential for technology applications in those markets because they've got money to spend. So I'd highly recommend going on to GetMinded.org.
I'm
going to
do that this afternoon. That sounds really good.
Like so they're not like books, but they're good online
useful tools. So we'll link that up. And obviously that way people can follow those people as well.
Thanks for listening to this mashup episode of Nui Tech People. Stay tuned for our next episode, which again will be a mashup episode to finish out 2019. As always, you can find all our previous episodes on www.nuitechpeople.com.au. We've been loving seeing the community share their favorite guest interviews on their socials. That really helps us grow our little independent podcast here. So thank you again for all that you've done for us. Hope you enjoyed the rest of your week.